Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, the world building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it's up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I am Ethan. Today's episode, we will be discussing dragons.
Well said. I like that.
Dragons.
I hope you say that to me in the future in like D&D games. I want you to say dragons that way.
Dragons.
Develop that into a full accent and then we're really cooking.
That is very difficult.
It's kind of just Transylvanian.
A little bit.
All right, Dracula's here.
Vaguely European Eastern somehow.
We're talking about dragons.
Dragons are crazy, man. I did a bunch of research before this call. Like, I sent you way too many videos.
Call.
Podcast. been at work.
We're in
lot.
Front of each other, for the record. This is not a call.
Been at work far too long. I did a bunch of research before today's podcast trying to figure out exactly what are we talking about when we're talking about dragons.
He was on a bit of a spiral here and
sent you a lot of videos. We'll make sure to, if you're curious which videos we're talking about, number one was the Dragon Summary by Overly Sarcastic Productions. Great video essay. The other one was the Dragons video by Pointy Hat.
Both of which were great videos. And I think the big takeaway out of the first one was that she pointed out dragons are like, they're in everything. They're in every folklore. The definitions are really varied.
And it's impossible to like morphologically like categorize them and identify and define
them.
They
can be anything. And her main takeaway, I think, is the main thing that we just want to summarize here at the top. We don't need to go down that. She did a better video. She's a fucking pro.
She's awesome.
Was that it can be everything, and that's why it's so loved in fantasy. Is that it can fulfill any purpose in a story, in a world. It is a blank slate, and it is fantastical. So that's like the beauty of it. Like a lot of the versions of dragons I was thinking of are, can do this, can do that. And it's like, well, it's just filling the hole within the fantasy world to explain something.
It's I now think of a dragon more as a symbol of the fantastical.
Yeah.
Right. Like, than anything else. I think that the Pointy Hat video added to it by really pushing the audience to think about when you're using a dragon, be very deliberate. What the fuck are you using a dragon for? Why specifically are you using a dragon?
Yeah.
Because what most people end up using.
He
was talking about it in a D&D context, but I think you can extrapolate it to say, when we're talking about dragons, like, is it a beast? Because a beast doesn't necessarily have to be a dragon, right?
Yeah.
Is it a threat? Is it a mystical person? Well, then just use a person. Why are you specifically using a dragon?
If it's a very smart and manipulative human in the end, if they just morph into a human, you probably didn't need a dragon.
Exactly.
You probably could have just used a human.
And I think that's a great
observation.
I think those are great points to think in mind. And it's got me thinking about, all right, well, then what are my favorite dragons in fiction, and what, based on these criteria, I sort of ended up actually with the dragon Shenlong from Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, you love your Dragon Ball Z, man.
I've been on an anime kick recently. Getting back to my roots. It's pretty great. But it's such a great.
Why is Shenlong good?
Shenlong is a mythical dragon. It is very drawn from Eastern influences, obviously, considering the source material, but it is more of a supporting character, an exemplary of the fantastical, because it is this big mythical dragon that grants wishes. That is its whole shtick, that you gather the Dragon Ball and it grants wishes. Now, could you say you could also do this with a genie or another type of creature?
Yeah.
Sure, but it's something that has to be supernatural. It has to be.
Well, and it creates an interesting tie-in on like the vibes of the Dragon Balls. You collect the Dragon Balls, and if you collect them all, then you can
summon the dragon.
You built in a vibe to the MacGuffin.
Right.
And like an iconic ending to the MacGuffin.
Absolutely. And it's when they do summon Shenlong, it's this big epic thing. The skies get dark and it's, you know, the light shoots out and it's like a mile long and it swirls around itself.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Unreal. It's so cool.
Yeah.
And that just is what I was surprised that I hadn't considered that more. You know, when you think about dragons, so many of us think about like Game of Thrones and Drogon.
There's like so many, like the new age of dragons is like this uniformity around mostly destruction,
right?
Of
the very Western approach, which makes sense. We're in the West,
yeah. And in like fantasy fiction, is often that, because that's where we're at. I think it's just changing the tone of the dragon can be really fun, and like you'll see that in like my ideas here today.
Same here.
But like I really love Smaug. specifically because, and I like Smaug, hearing Benedict Cumberbatch voice Smaug, because I think it's one of the coolest voice acting performances. Yeah, the Hobbit movies are shit. We all agree.
But Smaug was amazing.
Yeah. Smaug is amazing, and I think it's the portrait of a mad dragon.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah,
I love seeing the creature go crazy. It's like a bit of a trope. Whatever, it's great. The horde,
the greed,
like the insane greed, the insane horde level is really fascinating.
Yep.
But it's this, like, it's the intensity of any slight against the dragon.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, you're one person in here stealing one thing from me, and I'm going to lose my shit, and I'm going to have that, like, it's, like, as a DM, it's, like, dream to, like, act out that moment, to be, like, just dripping with hatred and villainy while you try to hunt down a fucking hobbit.
Smaug is a wonderful, if not, you could make an argument that he might be the kind of ultimate encapsulation of what a Western dragon is.
Well, Tolkien created it. So,
well, Tolkien created it, and Tolkien also said the only other dragon that would work would be
the one from Beowulf.
From Beowulf, yeah, that was in the overly sarcastic productions video. Everyone should go watch that. It's damn great.
Yeah,
the whole channel is amazing. I went down a deep rabbit hole there.
Yes, you did.
But what dragon are you going to talk to us about today, Kyle? How are you going to make dragons special? And
all right, so my tease up. My menu description for my dragon is a redeemed mayoral dragon.
Fascinating.
What's your tease?
Studio Ghibli.
All right.
I think you should go first.
Okay.
I would like to hear what you mean by mayoral. I mean, I should have expected that you would find a way to bring politics into this.
Yeah.
I should have.
And I brought city planning.
You did. Oh fuck! I let you down, bro.
I mean, did you?
No, I never let you down. I'm perfect.
You're never gonna give me up.
No.
No.
Continue. Mayoral dragons.
So,
Is it a giant dragon turtle?
No.
Bowser that breathes fire.
No, it is not.
Damn it! Now you've let me down.
Yeah, sorry. I like the idea of a dragon that specifically warms a lake that is supposed to be frozen, but it is a liquid lake because there is a dragon that lives beneath it who keeps it warm.
So like a hot spring.
Like a hot spring.
But in the middle of a glacier somewhere.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. But it's because there's a dragon down there who has made this his den, and he keeps it warm.
Okay.
With intention. It's not an accident. He's actively trying to keep the lake warm.
It's not just liquid. Warm because the dragon is asleep under there.
He's using like his fire breath
to
like make sure to keep it heated.
Got it.
That it stays a liquid lake.
Okay.
I like this idea. And so then I'm like, okay, why is he doing it? Where is he doing it? All that. So here's the full pitch of what I've got, which is that there was a dragon who is a typical violent fire-breathing dragon and like a very like
Western theme,
very like D&D, you know, red dragon. He wreaks havoc on a mountain village of some kind. And comes to feel bad about this. Has empathy. Guilt. Yeah, has guilt. This is not a fully evil dragon.
It's
just a dragon.
Sure.
Who does this thing out of like instinct or something and then somehow is able to, and however this happens, I don't know, but they change their mind about it. They say, oh, fuck, that was a bad call. I regret it. Whatever. Then they make it their goal to help this village. The lake, like there is like an ice age of some kind of coming. There is a changing of the seasons. It is getting colder and their water sources are freezing up and the dragon helps keep it running. Fast forward, they do this over time and they keep this place warm in a world that is otherwise very cold by heating the ground because they've built like a network underground to make this happen. And they create like a fertile land in a way that is retaining some sort of like spring. It's like a spring oasis in a way.
Yeah.
Here at this little village. And the dragon is a known part of the town. And when I say mayoral, is like they are a fundamental part of why this town is thriving now in a world that is no longer thriving. And it becomes a part of the community in a way. And not that it's like out there every day and like, but like, and he mostly wants to stick to himself because he wants, like, he wants to atone for what he's done.
Yeah,
and
this is his punishment, his penance.
In a way. And he's not a social dragon.
Is he the last dragon?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay.
I haven't considered other dragons. I'm just considering this one who does this.
Sure.
And that's kind of it. And the reason I like it is I like the vibes, but I like the idea of a place that has a relationship to a dragon that is positive and that is ongoing. And so say it's in a D&D campaign or any RPG, you can go to this town and you can meet with the dragon to learn about, maybe you're fighting another dragon. You can go there and you know if you go to him, he might be able to give you information.
Yeah.
Maybe he might be willing to give you information. He might not, but you can go there and try to learn from him. Like, hey, this dragon's creating some issues. Can you help us deal with him? Hmm. And he might be able to provide that. And you can have an interesting, peaceful interaction with a dragon where violence is not on the table.
It could be something, maybe the darkness or the winter, you know, the frigid wind spread to another area of the town and, or of the world. And you are adventurers from that area that have to go to the dragon to capture some of it, to ask or beg for some of its fire to bring back,
or
to bring to spread warmth somehow.
Or okay, take that idea and say, yeah, okay, this is a crisis that had been in, like, say, let's use the Earth as an example for geography's sake. Like, at the North Pole, this is happening. It's gotten colder, it's gotten more frigid, but we know there's like one that, like, Iceland is doing really well. And then everyone just says, oh yeah, they're doing really well. We don't know how, like, they figured something out. And then it starts to spread. And then the English are like, wait, can somebody go to Iceland and figure out what happened? Like, why are they surviving? We are fucked right now.
Right.
So you as the adventurers get to go to this village to figure out why they have survived, because the dragon's secret.
And I imagine a small tweak for me that I think would be fun is if the name of the location, the town, village, city, land, country, kingdom, whatever, shares the name of the dragon. So if the dragon's name is Smaug, it's like, oh, we have to go to the land of Smaug, and you don't learn that the country was named
the village of Smaug,
whatever, but you don't learn that that is also the name of the dragon
until you meet the dragon.
Until you meet the dragon and has been co-opted, and so people are just talking about, oh, the splendor of Smaug, the glory of Smaug, and you're like, oh my god, I got to see this fucking village.
Yeah.
And it's just a village, but it's warm and it's a paradise at the same time. And so there's this disconnect, and it's part of the mystery.
And as you're saying, like, it's just a village, I think is really interesting. So now I'm thinking about, what does it look like under the town where he's built a network of tunnels, or maybe not even network. Maybe it's just like a giant cavern, like the whole town, city, like this massive, you know, like Manhattan sized space is just a big cavern that he, like, there are pillars holding it up.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is this, it is palatial in a way, but it's palatial in a pragmatic way. It's all different, like,
columns, like, and arches, and
no, it's all practical stuff of little things he's created to make it easier for him to keep things warm, and like little trivets that he's created, and little like tubes that are going to one specific farm or going that way. And he's created this monument not to greed but to selfishness.
So depending, I you could do that. The cavern idea is great, particularly as a setting for a campaign or a game, where you, like, are a destination for a party to go and discover, and you know, kind of like Smaug's lair and under Erebor. Tweaking that idea.
Okay.
It is a small village. This is important. Because it makes the presence of the dragon that much more special and concentrated, and the oasis harder to find and a little bit more rare.
Gotcha.
It is kept warm by the very presence of the dragon, which is a long style dragon, you know, like the serpentine style dragon.
Uh-huh.
That is curled, dug caverns and tunnels, and just continuously moves and swirls under the village, where using its own body for heat and warmth.
Okay.
That is what's generating the heat. And there is a, maybe say, call it the chill, a once a month period where the dragon has to leave the cavern to go hunt and eat. And that is the one time when it is not actively, consistently, perfectly warm. And it is just one period. Because the dragon's got to eat somehow, unless you work out a relationship where the villagers are feeding it. That would be the other option. But I like that. I like that idea of the dragon, of it being like a coiled snake.
Yeah.
That just kind of lives under it, like a heating coil.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting idea. I really do. I'm struggling with the what then feels like zero agency or free time for the dragon. Of like, does it sleep? If it's got to constantly be moving.
Well, maybe it doesn't have to constantly move. Maybe it just, that was an idea, maybe it's just coiled under there and that's its life. And it's just very, it's just what it does.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I like having it be a bit more mobile and not beholden to specifically doing that, because I want it to be able to like take time to interact.
Got it.
And
that makes sense.
Like you want to go down and talk to the dragon. The dragon's available to talk, but the dragon otherwise is like a hermit and sits there and says like, you know, if you could please bring me some books or something. Like, if anyone wants to come down and just like hang out every once in a while, like I'm bored. Like I'm keeping this village and this land warm, but in the interim, I don't have a whole lot of entertainment going on, and I'm like trying to suppress my ways. So maybe it's like he's got friends in the village who come to like the actual mayor, or like in a couple of townspeople, or maybe everybody kind of like rotates and goes down, like they play cards with the dragon, or what, like there is some sort of like pleasant interaction that he has with the village on like a rotating basis, so they all create a sense of loyalty with him because they they all know him,
right?
They have a loyalty to the idea of the dragon, but they also get to know the dragon, and they see what he's constructed to help keep them in this oasis.
And it reinforces the need for secrecy, because it's, they know exactly what it takes to keep it warm.
Exactly.
And so you as the party or the protagonist have work to do to get them to trust you enough to meet the dragon.
And then here's where you get to a perfect hook. The dragon's now getting sick.
Right.
The dragon's on his deathbed. The dragon is and near the end of his life. What do you do? What do you villagers? You start a campaign. You are four villagers here who desperately need to save this dragon's life, because it will destroy your entire village. So it's not an end of the world thing.
No,
it's an end of this dragon. It's the end of this village's survival. They will all have to go somewhere else. What can you do? Can you do anything? I don't know.
It's a great character opportunity, depending on the makeup of your protagonist group or your party.
Yeah.
Because there's a Trial of Hercules aspect here, where maybe the someone from the party has to, the sorcerer has to stay and keep the fires going while the dragon leaves.
Oh, I like that.
And shows you a way. So sort of like Hercules taking the world from Atlas. Right. And he, like, I remember it, like he puts the cloth over his shoulders and Hercules hoists the weight of the world and takes it off of Atlas, who was carrying it as his burden. Right.
Yeah.
And readjusts or Atlas ties his shoes. I forget the myth, but I remember that part of it.
Yeah. It's I need you to hold this while I go help.
Right. Exactly.
And I think that's really cool imagery and very like cinematic, especially like, depending on how you build up to it.
Yeah.
If that's an earned moment, that could be really cool.
Yeah.
If it's not earned, it'll just be like, okay, whatever. But like as like a sequence of, if there's an emotional bond that's actually clearly there, I think that's the key with any story, obviously, is like building an emotional bond. But I think you create, this creates, this story idea is, has like so much emotional bond material ready.
Yeah.
That you could maybe get. So.
Well, and there's a huge amount of drama in it, and the world building itself is linked inexorably to the drama, which makes it very compelling.
Yeah.
And it also has very high emotional stakes, very low practical stakes. So it's not like the world is ending and Skybeam bullshit.
It's just you got to move south. That's it.
Right.
Your village of a few hundred people has got to go.
Abandon your ancestral home, right? Like that's...
Yeah.
I am very moved by that idea.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I think it's very beautiful. Very poetic.
There you go.
Very well done, my friend.
So, Ethan, tell me about your Studio Ghibli.
Studio Dragon. Ghibli? I was thinking about it because I really wanted to zero in on this idea of why a dragon, right? Like, why? What about this thing needs to be a dragon? And wanted something very distinct from the D&D style dragon, which is very concrete and, you know, they're separated by colors and it's all these disparate elements, like moving away from the Pokemon side of it. I also did think a lot about kind of like the Pokemonification of dragons, which is never a bad thing to think about. It's fun, but I wanted something that felt different. And I was inspired by a combination of things. Number one, I've been thinking a lot about and reading a lot about Eastern mythology. Just got back from honeymoon in Thailand, so I was reading about Thai culture, history, mythology, started getting back into Japanese and Chinese, just reading about it, nothing serious, you know, Wikipedia articles, things like that. Started thinking also about Studio Ghibli and rewatching those movies. And also there was a little bit of some of your campaign in here as a little bit of inspiration as well.
Okay.
This is largely inspired by the forest spirit from Princess Mononoke.
Okay.
Have you seen Princess Mononoke?
I think once.
Okay. So in Princess Mononoke, there is a forest spirit that is the guardian of life and death. It looks like this big deer, but with a human face. And most importantly, at night, the forest spirit, which governs life and death, turns into this translucent cosmic thing called the Nightwalker. And in so doing, it walks around the forests and kind of gathers up all the souls that have been lost in that day. Uh-huh. I really loved the idea of the transition and wanted something that was going to be a little bit different, a little bit more flowy. And in Chinese philosophy, there is this concept called wuxing, which is what we call in the West, you know, there's the four classical Greek elements, water, earth, air, fire. In Japanese, it's called godai. It's earth, air, water, fire, and then the void. And in Chinese, it's called wuxing, but the five elements are water, earth, fire, wood, and metal. But they are not seen as static world building blocks, you know, elements the way that they are in the West. They're seen more as phases. And I thought that was really interesting, you know, phases of growth and associated with the seasons. And so putting all of that together, I came up with this idea of a dragon that is more like a spirit rather than an explicit dragon. It is still elemental in nature. I decided to go with the godai, the Japanese, the earth, air, water, fire, where you are tied, each of the elements is tied to seasons. There is only one dragon in this world, but it changes with time and the seasons, just in the same way that the forest spirit changed into the Nightwalker at night. This dragon over time, as summer moves into fall, changes from a fire dragon into a wood dragon. And then a wood earth, air, water, fire. I'm losing track of my elements here. But the point is that it shifts and it changes with the seasons. It's more spiritual. It's reflective of kind of the state of the world and kind of inexorably tied to it. So it's mysterious. It's ephemeral. It's neither good nor bad. That's why I say Studio Ghibli, right? Because I wanted it to be sort of this unexplained, unclarified, flowing thing that it felt more folkloric rather than very D&D rigid. This is a fire dragon, red breath, right? Like this is a white ice dragon, you know?
So then,
and I was inspired partially by your world with the Temple of Time, with the, where time is the circle.
Yeah.
And the seasons and the temple changes.
Yeah.
So then I sort of just put all of those things together.
Yeah, that's cool. I like it. I'm trying to... So is the dragon then tangible?
It is tangible. It is real.
Yes, you can interact with
it. You can find it. You can interact with it.
Does it interact with you?
If it wants to. It's a little bit also unknowable, you know, a little bit Lovecraftian. Like, so yeah, you can have an interaction with it, but it's not necessarily going to speak with you in a concrete, understandable way. It might be you go up and you ask it a question and maybe it takes an action that you have to then interpret, sort of like a Zen Buddhism. You know, there's the concept of koan.
It's very much a deity.
It is very much a deity, but I don't want it to be seen as like a god. I want it to be very much seen as this is a spirit. This is like a level. This is part of or a manifestation of the world. It is revered and worshipped, but it is not omnipotent. It is not that level of deity.
Okay.
And that's why I wanted the idea of it shifting and changing to be very important. And it fits in culturally because then in this world, there's almost a celebration of when it changes from fall and the earth dragon of fall into the water dragon of winter.
Do they see that happen? Is this thing, how often is it visible to society? Or is it doing its thing out in the wilderness and no one's really aware what's happening with it? Because that seems quite relevant. If you have to seek it out.
I think people are absolutely aware of it.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily something that it's like, oh, it lives in it's fantastical in the sense of you can say, oh, it lives in this forest, but just because you go and look for it in the forest doesn't mean that you're gonna find it. It might appear to you.
Okay. Yeah.
But it is not, it's sort of seen if it wants to be seen, right? It's not necessarily there, but there's enough known about it so that there is a celebration or a festival for every changing of the season.
It feels like a fine line to being a god, being worshipped as a god, being a religion here, but I see the line. I know it's there.
Yeah.
I understand what you're getting at. I'm just like trying to keep myself from going over that line of it's a religion.
It's less about like, you're not like celebrating the dragon changing. You're celebrating the seasons changing.
Okay. It's just I didn't understand that. Yeah.
Sorry. I was not clear about that, but like the dragon changing is part of that celebration.
It's a symbol of time progressing.
It is a symbol of the world. Like it is like, it is kind of like the spirit of.
Yeah. It's like, it's hard to, when it's unknowable and like that, it's the spirit of the world. It can be hard for us, especially in the West, to like pin down that idea because it's not supposed to be fully pinned down, but to really frame it perfectly in our own heads to say, yeah, this is not a thing that can be pinned down. It has to be vaguely the world,
right,
in spirit form.
Right.
It is not knowable. It exists. The people have a relationship with it that is unique to us, you and I, because we don't have a thing like that.
It's not the same thing. It is not like this is a very clear, tangible thing. Like it's there. We know it's there, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it is going out and able to capture it. And maybe part of the adventure and the use of it as a story is that you do have to go out and find it and track it down. And so you have to figure out and try different ways to find it or to call it or to summon it. Or if you, one idea that I had with it is that, you know, you could imagine that the cycle had been going on. It's been this earth, air, water, fire. The cycle's been unbroken, but the fifth element in the Japanese Godai is void or aether in Greek, in the Greek elements. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's suddenly a fifth season. And it is obviously...
You just said both a movie and a book. The fifth element and the fifth season.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's putting ideas together. This is very, there's a lot of rigatoni. There's some ZD up there. We're not just throwing spaghetti anymore. We're throwing all types of pasta shapes.
Okay.
And then, so you have to sort of find and figure out, is this the void taking over? Is it that the, you know, what's happening? Maybe there is a villain in your story who is able to find the dragon and harm the dragon, and in so doing releases the void, because the void is what's held inside of the dragon, right? Like I want this sort of this very untangible, very amorphous. That's what I'm going for.
Yeah, I get it.
I have no name for it. Like, it's just sort of the dragon at this point in my head.
Well, then it's just Wheel of Time. It's
the, oh yeah,
it's right, the yeah. it's the world dragon.
The world dragon. I guess. Why not?
I don't know. I think it's really cool. It's so hard for me to even like add content to it or like come up with like spins on it because I'm just trying to wrap my head around it entirely. And I think that's a testament to the idea being cool because it's like a thought experiment to even understand it and to the imagery of it is also rather crystal clear of a dragon roaming through the woods, interacting with the world if it chooses to, and being this spirit, which like so many stories revolve around spirits of a people who really revere the spirits of the land or whatever. It's very like Native American inspired oftentimes. And that
it's an animist. It's animist. It's like Shinto is very similar, right?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I was thinking about animism before while we were talking about this. I don't think a story is what you get out of this. I think you get lore and you create a world because often when you're like creating worldviews and all that in any kind of story, it's always such like a sense that it should be relevant to what you're saying,
right?
And I think that's true to a sense, but like world builders like we are like just throwing in extra shit because we like building out the details,
right?
This is a perfect example of a thing that has a really cool and coherent worldview that doesn't need to be the center of a story and never really has to enter it other than to say like, you know, like there is the spirit of the world that we all like, because when you read stories like the Wheel of Time does this, oh, the wheel doesn't let you do this, or like, the nine don't like let you do this or whatever. Like there's always that, like the whatever,
right,
that people talk about as this, like we do it in the real world of like the universe won't let you do this. And in this story, it's like the world dragon won't let you do these things. It's a perfect explainer for a rule that governs people's lives, but not in like a deity way. This is a social norm we all live by.
It's just there.
And I don't think it needs to be the center of a story.
No.
It can be
if you wanted it to be, just in the same way that the forest spirit in Princess Mononoke becomes the center of the story because the emperor thinks that if you eat its head, you become immortal. So people are trying to get its head for the emperor.
Yeah, and if you're like running a D&D campaign, you could literally just do that.
You could, or just, you could just
rip off Princess Mononoke because people won't think, oh, Princess Mononoke is inspiration for a D&D campaign or something. It's like, yeah, it could be.
It could be. It's great. I think this is sort of the ultimate expression. The more that we've been doing this podcast, and I know you and I have talked about this offline a little bit, but throughout the year now that we've been doing this together, I have grown increasingly attached to and drawn to elements of a world that are not fully explained or fully or innately understood or exposited by every single character because
that's just over-explained world
building. It's over-explained world building.
And that's not how the real world works.
At all.
People don't, not everybody understands everything and not everything is fully explained in detail.
No.
It's not always understood by the people in the story.
And it impacts nothing. Right. Yeah. Like, so there's this, you know, there's this very funny thing. There was a great post on the Reddit world building that talked about if Earth was your world, you know, critique Earth, modern day.
Oh, yeah.
Earth,
I saw
like
that.
You would if it were a fake
like,
world.
And like the names don't make any sense.
The names don't make sense. It's lazy naming. It's like, oh, every room just conveniently has a magic ball of light that just works and not everybody knows how. That's lazy.
As you were saying this, like when I was thinking about like, yeah, world building in the real world, we can't all explain the logic of it all. I was like, I can't tell you how electricity works.
Right.
And I've tried to understand it at several points in my life, but if you told me how does a fucking AC or a DC or like how these currents work, I'm like, fuck if I know.
Right.
And that is,
I know that it does though.
Yeah, I know that it does, and everyone does. It's like, so if you're in a world, why would everyone understand how a hard magic system works?
Exactly.
They wouldn't,
right?
Because like that's just how electricity works. Let alone like how does a gun work?
Right.
Like, I mean,
I know the basic mechanics of it, but I don't know the full details or all the different types of bullets or the right. Like,
yeah,
and it's sort of, you know, there's world building, and there are stories that exist within worlds, and then there are stories that exist to explain worlds.
Yes.
And we vacillate between the two, and I think both are equally justified. I have just been...
It depends on what you're trying to do
with it. Depends on what you're trying to do with it, right? And so...
And as I recently learned, trying to run a campaign in a world where it was the world that I was interested in, right, not the story that the campaign would be.
Right.
So we've killed the campaign. It's like, well, actually, this isn't good. This won't work because this is not the purpose of this world. This world was meant for something else.
Right.
And sometimes, like, a world is meant to be a game. Sometimes mm-hmm. a world is meant to be a story. Sometimes a world, like all world builders, is just meant to just do it because it's fun. Because
right.
That's why we like world building, is we just like to world build.
Absolutely. The point of that was all to say, and look, there are going to be times when I go back towards hard world building, but like, that's why this is sort of the ultimate expression of that shift in my mindset about world building is like, it's understood. It is the dragon. It is the spirit of the world. It is one. It changes with the world. It changes, you know, to reflect the seasons or the states of matter, whatever. But it is never permanent. It is never rigid. It just is. Speaking of electricity, Kyle, lightning round.
All right. My lightning round.
Yeah.
My idea.
Hit me, bruh.
Is
wing attack.
I want to take a dragon and take the greed, but I'm going to make it modern, and they're a capitalist dragon who are monetizing their dragonness. So between whether it's people coming to see them as like a tourist, whether it's they're using their fire breath or whatever breath they have to like provide a service, it's come fly my wings, come do this thing, or like whatever. But they've like created like a Disney world for this dragon,
for
like,
themselves.
Yeah, it's like a theme park. Like, come and see me, I am your attraction, what do you want from me? Thank you for your money. So they create a horde, but it's
tourists.
But it's the willing. It's not I'm an extort you from
the willing horde. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's it. That's what I got.
That's fucking great.
All right. Give me your lightning round.
Going completely 180 degrees on everything I just said. but sticking with the elemental form, this is a little bit Pokemonization of dragons. But I wanted dragons to be. I got stuck on that idea of, you know, dragons cannot be morphologically kind of defined. I wanted dragons to follow real biology, where there are different, like, variants and types of them, but they are still able to interbreed. So even though there are different elemental dragons, they can still interbreed and have offshoots and different variants and different forms. So you might have a world where Eastern-style serpentine dragons are flying around with winged dragons or worms or whatever. Mm-hmm. In this world, there are four core types of dragon, earth, air, water, fire, naturally, but they start interbreeding, which leads to the offshoots, all different types of dragon. So if you get the offspring of an earth dragon and a fire dragon would maybe be
a lava dragon,
or maybe a smoke dragon. Maybe there are different types. An air dragon and a water dragon could maybe give you a fire, an ice dragon.
Yeah.
Right. Or a storm dragon, potentially.
Yeah. Okay.
A fire dragon and an air dragon could... I ran out of ideas outside of an explosive dragon, so I decided that's where I'd put lightning dragon, right?
Or that's the gun dragon.
Yeah, the gun.
It's just a mortar shell, yeah. Just flies out. You're like, oh, fuck, where'd that come from?
Or like a fire dragon and earth dragon could also be a metal dragon, because you need fire to refine metal from earth, right? But I just like this idea of like how many different variants, you know, when we were...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How can you get as close to like...
Minutes up.
Zoology as you can.
All right. Cool. I like it. All right. Well, that's a lightning round. So, Ethan, what stuck for you?
Ooh, I mean, I do kind of love, I am sort of in love with the shifting phase of the world dragon spirit idea.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to kind of be thinking about that for a while. But the storytelling potential for your dragon, like the folklore side of it, where it's, you know, it's named after the town, you have to interact with it, the bond between the dragon and the people, right? Like, it's such a different story than we've heard about these dragons in a long time.
Yeah, it's positive.
But it's not just positive, it's also mutually beneficial, right? Like, I feel like dragons have become such examples of the fantastical nature of a fantasy world that they're on such a different power scale that humans barely register to them.
Yeah, right? They are not. And it stuck for me as well on that, like, and that's why I was specifically like, I want them to interact with the village.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the, it's the registration of come on down here and like, let's hang out and bond. And like, yeah, it's strange because I am so much bigger than you and I could crush you all in a heartbeat, but reducing the fear of that and saying that, well, the dragon is just a manifestation of power.
Right.
It is not necessarily an evil thing that will, that wants to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
It's enjoying having friends with you.
Right.
Like, it wants friends within this village. It wants to play cards and like hear jokes and whatever.
It sees you as like, it's its children. You're its children. It's protecting you.
And
it's,
you see the other way around.
Right. As a parent, its mother, right?
Or as like, or as a protector. It's like, it's a guardian.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just thought that it was very, like I said, I was very moved by that. It was very warm and fuzzy. And that's what left me with it. So that's stuck for you.
Well, what I just said, so... Yours also. I think the unknowable element of the spirit dragon is very peculiar to me, and it's very unique. And I do like the idea of this thing doesn't show itself to you unless it wants to.
Mm.
I think it's just kind of fun, and I think that's cool. And it's hard for me to wrap my head around it, but I like that it's just a subtle thing, because I view it at what you propose as a subtle thing,
and not as
a story, but as a backdrop, as world building for something else, where it plays a role and it's a really nice piece of it, but it isn't the focal point. Correct. And it doesn't have to be, because world building isn't always about the focal points. We often talk about them like that, but it's not the case.
Nope. So, it's just part of it.
Just part of it. All right, that's what stuck for us. Let us know what stuck for you.
Emails in the show notes.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye. Dragons.